Hello and welcome back to the Legal Queen podcast. I release these episodes each Sunday morning at 6 a.m. We have 11,000 monthly listeners, so I hope that you enjoy as we try to help those that have a family law question or query by giving as much information as we possibly can. So if I could ask that if you enjoy this podcast, please consider giving me a 5-star rating so that we can help even more people. My goal is to reach a total of 50,000 monthly listeners by the end of the year, and you guys can help me do that. Anyway, let's get on with the episode. I hope you enjoy.
Ansie, what's your question for me?
My question is that what my chances are if I apply for my brother to have parental responsibility for my child? We lived together for 2 years. My baby's going to be 2 years, just in 2 months' time. And obviously he spends almost all day with him for like few hours a day. So when, because I'm working from home, so when he's not working, he's spending time. So he's taking care of my son to help me to just do my work.
Where,
so is there any possibility?
Ansie, yeah, so, yeah, so where the question is around what will my prospects of success be if I make an application, that requires advice. Okay, so and I think we've spoke about this before. When it comes to giving advice, I can't do that. A, you have to be a client, and B, it's too much of a public forum to give specific advice. So I wouldn't be able to answer that question. What I would say, though, is that your brother's application probably won't even get past the gatekeeping, because the court aren't likely to give him parental responsibility because he's the uncle. Okay, so you'd need to take advice if you wanted a specific answer. All right.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. Bye. Zoe has just said it's very difficult to get PR moves, and I'm going to jump on that while I'm waiting for another question. It absolutely is. The preference to keeping PR and just limiting contact or barring contact will always be the one that the court go for. And the reason for that is that we're only going to remove parental responsibility in extreme cases. Just because somebody has parental responsibility doesn't mean to say that they're automatically going to get contact and unlimited contact. Okay, so don't worry about that. You're better off making an application that reduces contact, limits it completely, bars it perhaps, or even put a prohibited steps order in place. All right. Can I make a C100 application for a 15-year-old child? Yes, you can, is the correct answer to that question. However, the child's likely to get to 16 before you finish the application, and then the order won't be any good anyway, because they naturally or organically drop away once the children reach 16. Okay. I'm going to go back to that question. Can my partner get PR if we are not married? You'll struggle to get PR if you're not married. Step parents will generally be given PR in a heartbeat because they're married, so the court's confident that there's a large commitment been made there. And I know there's a few of you that don't, you know, appreciate that, but it's just the court's thinking, unfortunately. If you're not married and it's just a partner, I'm not saying it's impossible, it's just not as easy. Okay. James says, I'd really love your help with my ex-wife and my children. By all means, James, ask a question and one of the mods might pin it for you. Is legal aid available for a Talata claim if there's no domestic violence? Then no, it isn't. You'll only get legal aid now if there is domestic violence or if there's care proceedings afoot. So if social services are involved and your children are potentially being removed from you, James says, I did message you DM. James, I get so many DMs. I do reply to some, but I can't reply to all. So you're better off either emailing, putting a question now that I'm live on the TikTok and I might see it, or coming onto the Discord, okay? Can you get legal aid for DV if you are here on a spousal visa? Good question. I'm not sure, but what I would say is give the Civil Legal Advice Line a call, because they'll be able to answer you that. And their phone number is 0345 0345 345 4345, okay? 0345 345 4345. 4 months and I've not seen them. She has alienated them against me. If you're talking about your children, I appreciate you can only get so many words into the TikTok questions. All you can do is make an application to the court. Try mediation first of all to see if you can resolve. If you're not seeing them for 4 months, what is the issue there? What issue does mum have? I know that I saw you mentioned alienation. That is a large hurdle to get over. The test for parental alienation is a difficult one. It's a strong one. So mediation, court application, okay? And the reason I say that is because it's the child's right to have a relationship with both parents, all right? It's not for a parent to deny the child that right, except if there are welfare concerns, okay? People are sending me WhatsApp messages, but I can't read them, sadly, just because I'm live on the TikTok. So apologies for that, guys. What was I saying there? Can't remember. It's gone completely out of my head because somebody was messaging me. Right, next question. My ex keeps saying the court order is a guideline. Am I right in saying it's not and it must be stuck to? Absolutely. It is a legal order. It's a sealed order made by the court, so it has power and you must stick to the court order. If you don't stick to the court order, then you are in breach of it and there could be penalties for that in family court. Good evening, Mart. How are you? Do you have a question for me?
Hi,
I'm good, thank you.
I do, yeah. I got a couple of you.
Okay.
I'd like to ask the legal queen about mum breaching orders consciously without withholding children. I got them back through an emergency hearing, but she's making allegations saying that the children, when will the courts see that enough is enough?
Well, the courts will see that if you persuade the courts of that. That's going to come down to your evidence. That's going to come down to what you put in your statements and your exhibits that you attach. It's up to you to convince the court of your position. You know, when you if you can put yourself in the judge's shoes, he's getting two conflicting pieces of information. So which one is the more compelling? And that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. The next one I got for you is we have an occupational order hearing soon and my husband is hiding bank accounts and he has denied his accounts. I've got a letter from the bank confirming he withdrew the money. Can I use this to prove he can rent a place, but he is not doing this and pretending that he can't afford to rent a place? All the bills on his name, even the car insurance is in his name. And because I got a non-molestation order, I keep checking the letters just in case I need to act quickly in any change that he has done. What should I do?
So I think the first question was, can I submit the letter that she got from the bank into evidence? Absolutely, yes, she can. I mean, if that letter's addressed to her, then yes, she can submit that into evidence. Or if it's addressed to both of them, yes, she can. And of course, that's going to help her case because the hardest thing about an occupation order is letting the court know that they've got somewhere else to go and that they can afford it. So yes, she can. The rest of that question, Mark, I didn't really understand because she was more just telling us facts and then said, what can I do? You've just got to make your case as strong as you possibly can by thinking outside of the box and attaching evidence that's going to persuade the court to give you the order that you're asking for.
Yeah, no worries. The next one is, I have been given residency, DB involved, proven criminally, dad was charged, son witnessed strangulation, CAFCA section 7 states no direct contact, prohibited steps, and dad to only send letters twice a year. Dad has disputed this and now we have a final hearing. How likely will the judge agree with CAFCA?
So the judge does put a lot of emphasis on CAFCAS's recommendations, that's for sure. But sometimes CAFCAS will say things that aren't quite right. because their workload is such that they can sometimes, and with the greatest of respect to CAFCAS, they can get families mixed up. So if that's happened here, I would definitely be letting the court know that, because it might be enough to persuade the court away from CAFCAS. But to answer your question in the, you know, I suppose most simplest form, that yes, the court will be guided by CAFCAS because it's their only independent source of information. You know, it's the only information that comes before the court that's not emotionally involved and that we like to think is completely truthful and in the child's best interests.
I have got a couple more for you, but I know there's like one or two hands come up, so yep. I'm happy to wait on the stage if you're interested.
Okay, thanks, Mar. I'll go to Samantha next. Samantha, whenever you're ready, ask me your question. Hello.
Sorry, we That's have okay. just spoken.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. My child's due to go to his dad's this weekend.
Yeah.
Through court order. He's been signed off by the hospital until Monday for complete bed/sofa rest. He's not allowed to use his legs.
Yeah.
And obviously he'd prefer to be at home. But where do I stand with that?
What do you mean? What do you mean, where do you stand? If the court signed him off as sick, I mean, sorry, the hospital signed him off as sick and needs complete bed rest, the court would take the view that dad's also able to give bed rest. So what do you mean by where do I stand with that? Is that what you meant?
Yeah. Pretty much my question.
Yeah. So the court would say, unless you think that, you know, the child won't be looked after properly, both parents can care for a sick child. That would be the court's view.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks.
He's still yet to even know what's wrong with him because he hasn't run.
Okay. Well, maybe when you drop the child off, let him know. And of course, you know, if he doesn't look after him, you'll know for next time. I know that seems a bit harsh, but sometimes you've just got to see what happens. All right.
Okay,
thanks, Samantha. Asia, just sent you an invitation to the stage. So whenever you are ready, ask me your question. Mart, perhaps while we're waiting for Asia, you can ask me another question.
Hello.
Oh, I've put Asia on mute, Mart. So you carry on and ask me your question now.
Yeah, no worries. So this is a follow-on from a previous question that we've had. I'm just going to go to the grit of it, really.
Yeah.
Dad just had an update. Dad doesn't want no contact centre and wants to attempt mediation again. I'm reluctant as I took time off work and then he cancelled. So do I have to mediate again? And if I say no, would that go against me?
You don't have to mediate again, no, because mediation isn't compulsory, it's voluntary. So my answer there would be you don't have to mediate if you'd rather not. What was the first part of the question, Mark? Sorry. What is it that... They've got a court order, but she's...
I don't think there's a court order in place as of yet.
Right.
But Dad is refusing a contact centre.
Okay.
And just wants to attempt mediation again. But she's reluctant because she took time off work last time.
Yeah. So no, she doesn't have to. I mean, at the end of the day, things move on, don't they? If it's mediation again, and mediation didn't work the first time, and Dad's reluctant to go then to the contact centre, then let Dad make the court application.
Okay, no worries. I'll let you get on with Asia.
All right.
Because the next one is quite lengthy.
Okay, thanks, Mark. Asia, taking you off mute now. What's your question?
Hi. My question is, I put application for divorce as a solo applicant, and it's in January. And my husband sent a message to me through the mutual friends. I will not do signing. So my question is, if my husband will not signing on divorce application, then what happened next? What court will take action?
So the court won't do anything, Asia. This is your application, so you've got to drive it, okay? If he doesn't sign the acknowledgement of service and return that to the court, then you can get a process server to serve him with the divorce petition. And once the process server serves him with the divorce petition, the process server will give you what's called a statement of service. And you will then send that statement of service into the court as evidence that he has received the divorce petition, and then the divorce process can continue without his involvement.
All right.
Pleasure. No problem. Thanks, Asia. Bye-bye. Zina, you have your hand up. What's your question?
Hi, thank you. My husband and I applied for the divorce, but I have normalization order. And he's been manipulating the kids. Every time they see him, they will come feeling guilty, feeling bad, putting pressure on me. What should I do in this case?
So that's not really a legal issue, Zina. I think that's just a case of trying to co-parent. If co-parent is breaking down, then you're just going to have to parent the children in a way that makes them feel at ease with the situation. That isn't something that we can provide a legal remedy for, okay? So if your your ex-partner is telling the children things that aren't true, then it makes your job as a parent harder, but you're just going to have to deal with that. There won't be a legal remedy.
He's been using them, and recently, if they don't see him, he cancelled the membership of my oldest one for the gym because she's not seeing him. For the youngest one, she has a game and membership in there. He cancelled it. Next time I see you, I'll redo it. He's been just playing cards for the kids to see him. At the same time, he's affecting them in school. He's affecting them at home. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I think maybe, as I say, there is no legal remedy for that, not at all. But it may be that, you know, you just sit and speak to him, sit maybe and speak to a mediator. But sadly, there's no legal remedy. I mean, if he's cancelling subscriptions for the children, which is leaving them disappointed, I completely understand that. But a court's not going to give you an order forcing him to, you know, take up the subscription again. So I'm sorry that I can't give you a better answer than that.
Or the other thing is, can I, we have the molestation order. Can I meet him? Because he's been asking me to meet up. But I told him, it's illegal. I'm not going to meet you.
So I think you've answered your own question there, Zina. So if you've got a non-molestation order, that's going to bar him from coming anywhere near you. So no, you can't meet him.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks then.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank
you. Thank you very much.
Mark, did you have another question for me?
Yeah, so I'm just going to read it as it is. And
yeah.
Be a trigger warning for others. But
okay.
Here we go. I have a live with order and have for the last 7 years. Dad sees daughter Saturday night until Sunday. But it's not been stuck to very well on his behalf. My daughter came home crying in December, expressing that her dad said not to tell anyone. Then she disclosed that she sleeps in her dad's bed and has accidents because there is a tent and plants in her room. He hits her in the face and grabs her by the arms and leaves her on her own in the shop. And he has friends over and she hides in the wardrobe. I stopped contact immediately and contacted a solicitor. We waited for Dad to take me to court for custody, but he didn't. He then started coming to my daughter's school and my address and trying to gain access, so police have noted this. I've applied for a PSO, and on the back of that, we have a court next month now because I applied for it. Kafka's are going to be doing a safeguarding report. I'm awaiting a visit and contact over the phone, and same for him. My daughter doesn't want to go to her dad's. She's petrified. Will Kafka's take her wishes into consideration as she's 8 years old? We've had phone calls with her dad since the start of December, but he was shouting down the phone at her because she has told me what he's done. So I have also stopped this.
I think Mark, I get the gist of it. Yeah. I mean, at eight, she's very young. However, Some of these allegations are pretty serious. I mean, you know, the child is being left on her own, is fairly distraught, hiding in the wardrobe. I mean, I think that, you know, if the child is able to repeat any of that to Kafkas, that will certainly be put down in a report. It seems to me that she's doing everything that she can. She's obviously got a solicitor on board. The solicitor is saying, get the PSO. She's doing that. There isn't anything more she can do, really. And even if the child's wishes aren't taken into account, the court's certainly going to listen to mum. You know, if I were mum, I would be really focusing on my statement and putting chapter and verse in there, using some sort of persuasive language to convince the court that actually having contact simply isn't in the child's best interest. He sounds fairly aggressive and short-tempered. If he can't get his own way, you know, a little bit irritable. I mean, hitting the child in the face, she's wetting the bed. It's all going in one direction, really, isn't it? And I would say that would be no contact until dad has maybe completed some parenting courses. There's anger management courses out there. There's all sorts of courses for people that struggle to control their emotions, particularly around children. So to answer her question, Mark, maybe she's 8. She's a little bit young. But then we've got serious allegations, which Kafkas is certainly not going to ignore.
The next one I got for you is
Mark, can I just jump in there? I just wanted to answer. I've just out of the corner of my eye, Glyn Stewart on TikTok says, why is it just mum, mum, mum? How about the father? We're really pro fathers on here, Glyn. You just happened to jump in when I was answering a question about the mother. But please don't think that we show any favouritism to mums or dads. When I'm asked a children's question, I answer it from the perspective of the children. I'm not answering from the perspective of mother or father. I've had plenty of fathers on that have asked me that question. So just because I didn't want other people to see that comment and think that actually this is very much a channel for mothers, it certainly isn't. Sorry, Mart, I interrupted you. Crack on with the question whenever you're ready. Thanks.
Can I get a PSO without dad knowing, please? Baby isn't due until October, but I've been stung in a custody case and lost due to the ex taking my younger kids and getting to keep them.
PSO without dad knowing, not really. You may get an emergency order that's given to you straight away to afford you and the child protection. But within sort of 7 days, the court's going to make a direction that you serve father with that petition or the application, sorry, and then there'll be a return date. So you can be given an emergency order without the other side knowing, but then the other side will eventually have to be told and the court will afford them an opportunity to see or to respond to why the order perhaps shouldn't be made. So the overall answer to that question is no. Dad will eventually know that there is a prohibited steps order. And to be honest, he needs to know, because if he doesn't know about the order, he could breach it without his knowledge, which wouldn't be fair to him.
There are a couple more that have just come in, but yep. I'll let you crack on with somebody else.
Okay. Cheers. Thanks, Mart. Gabrielle, you've been waiting patiently. What's your question?
Oh, hiya. Thank you for having me on.
That's okay.
So mine is a bit of a child contact issue. So me and my ex-partner have been split for nearly a year now, and it's been really hit and miss with regular contact with the kids on his side. Roughly about 6 months ago, I said that I would like to swap the weekends round because for my job, so that I can work on the weekends when I don't have my children and I can be at home on the weekends when I do have them. I explained to him that, you know, I work around him, he can't have them during the week because he's at work, so it'd be really appreciated if he could work around me. His answer to that was, you shouldn't work, I pay you maintenance. And I said, no, I do still need to work. So we're going on 6 months now and he still hasn't agreed to the weekend swap, and he wants to have the children on the weekends when I don't have my older two children. So it means that every weekend I would have either my younger two or my older two, and they wouldn't be together. And he's saying to me, like, oh, if we go to court, you're not going to know what's hit you. They'll eat you alive. Court's not a game and all this kind of stuff. And I've never been to court before. So I just wanted some advice, really, on if what I've done would be deemed bad by the courts or if it is a reasonable matter for swapping weekends.
So it's a breakdown in co-parenting, but it's a reasonable, yeah. It's a reasonable request that you've made from him based on what you're telling me. Absolutely, that's reasonable.
Yeah.
The reason I start with it's a breakdown in co-parenting is because the court can't always fix that. So if he doesn't make the application and, you know, the routine simply can't continue as it is, he may force your hand. You know, you may have to make the application. Yeah. And based on the fact that you are making a reasonable request, I see no reason why the court wouldn't give you an order stipulating a certain weekend. It's a shame, though, because that seems to me like a very easy fix. You're not denying him contact. You're simply saying, can we swap weekends? But
that's all I've done. I've matched it. I've managed to match it up as well because he's court ordered with his older daughter and I've matched it up that he would have my two children that are her brother and sister on the same weekends that he would have her, but he still doesn't want to have those weekends. So I think it is a bit of a, he's just trying to spite me in a way.
Yeah.
But obviously with him just saying to me, you're going to get eaten alive in court and all this stuff. It does make me worry. As I said, I've never been before. I don't know what to expect.
Yeah. I mean, the family court doesn't eat anybody alive. You know, family judges, family magistrates, even the legal advisors, they recognise now that a lot of people can't afford legal representation and are representing themselves and are nervous and intimidated by the legal process. Nobody gets eaten alive in family court. If somebody steps out of line and somebody's disrespecting the court and not filing things on time or not providing the children for contact, there'll be a stern word. That's about as far as it goes.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks, Gabrielle. Bye. Louise, I'm going to come to you next. You've been waiting patiently with your hand up. What's your question?
Hi.
Hello.
My partner, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can, yeah.
Sorry, yeah. My partner has been co-parenting with his ex for a whole year, and they've had 50-50 contact, where the children go to a childminder's when she has to go to work. However, when he works, he only works 3 days a week.
Yeah.
But he gets the rest of the time with them. So his days off are spent with his children.
Yeah.
She's quite abusive, and she's been very abusive over the past few months, and he's started to refuse to pay the childcare because he pays for her childcare, basically. He's not paying, he's not his time. When he has his children, they're not in childcare. Because his parent refused to do that, she's now threatening him, obviously, with court and stuff like that. But a recent threat today was that she will take him to court and they still have a house together. So she's saying that the court will use the house money when the house sells to put towards the legal fees. So he's obviously panicking. And I'm not sure if that's true or not.
I think it's safe to say that, it's not true. she's chatting. Okay. She's chatting a little bit of nonsense there. I always think where we've got lots of things going on, finances, children, the other side seem to be taking great delight in giving false information. Best thing to do is go and see a solicitor and just get that 1 hour advice. You know, pick a solicitor that's local to you or whoever and get 1 hour's solid advice, because you'll come out of that consultation knowing exactly what you're entitled to in terms of finances and exactly what's in the best interest of the children. There's nothing worse than when I hear people like yourself, Louise, and the other side are just talking absolute rubbish. I mean, Gabrielle, who's just been on, you know, her partner saying exactly the same thing. It's not true. It's not true at all. And I'm here to tell you that family court isn't as scary as that. And if it's a children's application, court's always looking at what's in the best interests of the children. Can they take the money from the house and order that legal costs are paid? No, they can't. The court can't order you as to how to spend your money. Each person's responsible for their own legal costs. So no, all of that is
a quick question.
Yeah. Carry on.
Quick question was that the children have been with him from like 50-50 the whole time. They've been split for a year.
Yeah.
Now she's saying that it's supposed to pick him up from the childminder tomorrow night, that he's not allowed to do that. Obviously, he doesn't want to upset the kids. But now he's panicking about, you know, what that she's saying, I'm taking them now, you're not going to see them. It's all that kind of horribleness. It's only going to affect the children, but he's worried on where he stands with that, because it's just an informal arrangement that they've had.
Yeah.
She's only stopped it now because he's...
If the matter comes before the court, know, Louise, that the court's always going to go with what is the routine the children have been used to. So if it's always been a 50-50 arrangement, they're going to be looking at mum to say, right, what good reason did you have to upset the children's routine? So again, put yourself in the judge's shoes and see it from the eyes of the children. Yeah. Mum's going to really have to make her case there. And as long as dad gets into court fairly quickly, the court's going to make an order that we have 50-50 shared care, because that has always been the routine since, you know, for however long.
Well, and also, if she was her way, the children would be in childcare when they would just be with their dad who's off.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, does it?
Exactly. And again, you stress that point because that's in the best interests of the kids. Definitely.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Pleasure. Thanks, Louise. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. Bye.
Mart, do you have another question for me or will I go to TikTok?
Yeah, no, I do.
Okay.
Could I ask, how do the courts view one parent hating a step-parent and saying they are doing too much and interfering, when the reality is that they just support the dad and are very good with the child? They are also now saying that they're moving away from the dad 2 hours to limit contact. How will the courts view this if the intention behind is to move away for that purpose?
Yeah, I mean, what I would be advising the parent who's going to have their contact impacted is to make an application to the court for a prohibited steps order to stop the parent from making that move. The court's not going to necessarily get involved with the fact the adults don't like each other. But if the other parent's making allegations that the step parent is interfering, again, the court's going to take one look at the children and think, are the children suffering any harm from that? No, well, then get on with it. You know, adults don't like adults. That's fine. Just move on. But if moving 2 hours is going to impact the children, then the court can put a stop to that. You know, they can sort of say, well, look, hang on a minute. That means that the parent's contact is going to be massively affected or impacted, and that's not in the best interest of the child. But in that situation, you want to be a little bit more proactive. You're going to have to get your application in pretty quickly rather than wait till it happens. Because if it happens and then you do it, it's difficult for the court to then force that parent back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. The next one I got is, I'm sorting a divorce out, but I believe my husband has sent money abroad and has loads of shares and others the money's about. Will this be found in the financial order, and what happens if he doesn't disclose this?
Well, if you've got evidence that he has all these other assets and he's not disclosing them, that's a massive attack on his credibility. So then you've got power to your case to start asking the court for what you consider to be fair and reasonable. Remember, I'm always saying to people, it's the power of persuasion when we get before the court. So if we're able to attack the other side's credibility, it means that our ability to persuade the court is even stronger. So you just want to let the court know he's got all of these other assets. Here's the evidence of that. And he refuses to provide them to us.
Okay. The next one I have is, the children are due to go to their mothers on Saturday for 6 hours. I'm hesitant on sending the children in case mum withholds them again. She has been recording the children to say things. Could you please ask the legal queen if I have to abide by the order and send them, or is it enough to withhold them?
Sorry, what is mum doing, Mart, again? Just say the first bit again.
So I'm assuming dad has the children full time.
Yeah.
And they're due to go to their mum's for 6 hours on Saturday.
Yeah.
Previously, mother has not sent the children back.
Oh, I see.
So dad had to get an emergency hearing to get them back.
Yes.
Should he still abide by the order to send them, or is her previous actions enough to stop the contact on Saturday?
The thing is, if Dad's gone back to court to get the emergency order, the wording in that order will be that Mum only has them for 6 hours. And it might even be that the emergency order has a penal notice attached to it, because the court's going to want to prevent Mum from being able to do this again. Now, if that is the case, at the end of the 6 hours, if Mum doesn't give them back, then he can call the police and get the police involved. So you don't necessarily then need to return to court. It depends on the wording. But if the court, you know, provided him with an emergency order to say, right, Mum can still have them for 6 hours, but we're going to put all this protection in place in case Mum does it again, he should really comply with the order, yes.
No worries. If there's anybody else that wants to talk, mind. Yeah, there is. Leanne.
Okay.
I'll drop down for a sec.
Brill. Thanks, Mart.
The next one.
Okay, thanks. Leanne, whenever you're ready, give Mart a minute to read his questions. Ask me yours. I've sent you an invitation, Leanne, so there we go. What's your question?
So basically, I am recently divorced from my wife, and we share a 3-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
When we got married, I took my ex-wife's surname, so my daughter has her now surname. I have asked a question about adding my maiden name, obviously my surname that I now use, in addition to my daughter's surname, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
She has said no. There is no reason other than she just doesn't want to have my surname in our daughter's name as well. My argument was, is that we're a same-sex family. I already get questioned with my daughter about being her mum when it comes to, because I didn't carry her.
Yeah.
When it comes to taking her to medical appointments, when we're travelling, you know, getting questioned at borders if we don't have the same surname.
Yeah.
And I know that you have to get written permission if I'm travelling with her, as we don't have the same surname, from my now ex-wife, which I can't guarantee she'll always want to give me.
Yeah.
So my question was, is that if she doesn't agree to adding my surname into our daughter's name, is there a way to go around it, you know, to get it put in there through legal, because she doesn't have any reason why she doesn't want to add my name. It's not like I want to take away her name, I just want to add mine in.
I think let's look at the bigger picture, Leanne. So let's say that we made an application to the court and we persuaded the court that the child should have a double-barreled surname. That solves that problem, but it doesn't solve everything. So it doesn't solve the fact that she may not then give permission for you to travel with the child. She may not allow you to have as much contact as you want with the child. What I would be suggesting in that instance is, if we're going to make a court application, let's make sure that we get a child arrangements order that covers everything. Okay, so we might be asking the court for the name. We might be asking the court to lay out and to define where the child lives and how much contact she has with the other parent, or are we having a shared live with order? We also want a clause in that order that says you are allowed to take the child on holiday out of the jurisdiction for up to 4 weeks of the year without mother's permission. Because the benefit of having that order won't just regulate your ex in what she is deeming to be fair and reasonable, but also gives you the power when you are travelling or you are taking your daughter to the doctors, because you just whip out the order and say, look, here's the order. I've got parental responsibility. I am a legal, guardian of the child. So it just encompasses everything rather than just focusing on the name. So if you and her aren't able to sit down and agree that you want to be doing a C100 application, and you're just sort of ticking all the boxes really, because you want this overall order, everything in there.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Because we do, you know, we have an agreement in place, but it's obviously not a court order or anything, and it does work somewhat.
Yeah.
However, the issue that I have is that when you know, she's, you know, not happy with IE. I asked a question about changing her name.
Yeah.
I then get met with resistance. So I know what you mean. It would just make me feel better to know that if anything did happen, that I'm sort of, shielded by that's set in stone. So no, that makes sense.
And, you know, so many parents start off with the parental agreements or just the general agreements that we find it works 70% of the time, but there will just be these odd elements that don't work. So it's fairly routine to get the existing agreement turned into the child arrangements order, but then to tweak it and add in other things. And I think that's sensible, because then if everyone knows where they stand, you find that sometimes, not always, but it can then take out the animosity, because then we're not arguing, trying to prove our point. Then we're literally just following the order.
Yeah, that was and that was the reason why I sort of wanted it in court and further said that, you know, then there's no reason for us to communicate other than obviously if my daughter's unwell or anything like that, because we know where we stand.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's definitely a good idea. Thank you.
All right, pleasure. Good luck with that, Leanne. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. For those of you listening on the podcast, I really hope that you enjoyed that episode. And don't forget, guys, if you can give a 5-star review, if you think that it's worthy of one, that would really help us increase our monthly listeners and therefore help more and more people. Thanks again.